Good afternoon and welcome to the Lunchroom, sponsored by Navita Designs, powered by Reno Construction and Industrial Products Limited. And we are live on Radio Caribbean International for Monday, the 18th of November, day number 322 of the year 2019. It's on to show number 179 here at the Lunchroom. And I'm your host, Calix George Jr. And in addition to radio on 101.1 and 99.1 FM, you can also follow us live online. And that is at our website, rcisaintlucia.com, as well as our Facebook live feed. Just search for the official page of Radio Caribbean International. And remember to please like and share that as well with your friends. And on today's menu in the Lunchroom, golf courses and sustainable development. And I'll be speaking about the controversial Cabot Links or Cabot Golf Course up at Cap Estate. And to have that discussion, I'll be speaking with two sustainable development advocates, Miss Finola Jennings-Clark and Mr. Laura Jean-Pierre. And another murder over the weekend in St. Lucia, and we'll be speaking about that very briefly as well for our dish of the day. But of course, a few birthday wishes for November the 18th go out to Mr. Eric Charles, Mr. Danelle Florius, Mr. Lavelle Remy, Mr. Wayne Vitalis, Miss Keisha Antoine, Mr. Hildreth Lewis, Miss Nicole Alce, Miss Valerie Clement, and Miss Aisha Vellinor. We wish you all a happy birthday and all the very best on your special day. And of course, if you'd like to send birthday wishes or any sort of anniversary greetings, you may do so via the Lunchroom, and you can send in that request via Lunchroom at rcisaintlucia.com. That's our email address. And one notable woman born on November the 18th is the African-American abolitionist and women's right advocate, and her name is Sojourner Truth. And a few notable events which happened on November the 18th include, in the year 1477, the first printed book in English. And that was the Diets and Sayings of the Philosophers. I wish I could show you the spelling on that one, but that was by William Caxton. And in 1626, St. Peter's Basilica is consecrated. And that, of course, is in the Vatican in Rome, and the world's largest Christian church. And it was replacing an earlier basilica on that same site. In 1902, the teddy bear is coined. And that was by a Brooklyn toy maker, Morris Micton. And he named it after U.S. President Teddy Roosevelt. In 1913, Lincoln Deechee, he performs the first loop-the-loop with an aircraft, indeed, and that happened in California, in San Diego. In 1916, finally, the decision to pull out of the Battle of the Somme in World War II was taken on November the 18th by British General Douglas Haig, and that was after nearly a million soldiers were killed and wounded. In 1978, over in Jonestown in Guyana, 918 members of the People's Temple are murdered or commit suicide under the leadership of cult leader Jim Jones. And in 1993, black and white leaders in South Africa approve a new democratic constitution for South Africa. And now we move on to our dish of the day. The Daily Dish is brought to you with the kind compliments of our good friends at Tiles Plus.
Plus, we have tiles for inside and outside. Bathroom, kitchen with the best price. We range from colors to size. So anytime you want tile, come down and get tile. Everybody welcome to Tiles Plus. Come get your tiles with the low cost. Tiles with the style like a Christmas. Or kind of tiles, cause we are the boss. Everybody welcome to Tiles Plus. Come get your tiles with the low cost. Tiles with the style like a crisscross. All kind of tiles, cause we are the boss. We are located Lance Road in Castries, Bosses, Jugros Delay, and Clark Street in J4. Telephone number 453-7939. That's telephone number 453-7939. Tiles Plus.
Serving now, the Daily Dish.
And welcome back to the Lunchroom for a new week. And of course, I'm your host, Calix George Jr. Now, over the weekend, unfortunately, another murder, this time down in the community of Grand Ravine in the Mabuya Valley. A very gruesome scene indeed. Unfortunately, we do lament the fact that quite often individuals circulate these photos on social media. And it certainly was not a pretty picture at all. a very, very unfortunate situation that we continue to be faced with in St. Lucia, of murder after murder. Now, it's very difficult to even give a clear and concise idea as to what is really the homicide count at this point in time. I know efforts have been made to try to ascertain precisely what that is right now. But I believe, from my estimate, it's somewhere about 45. But we can, of course, stand to be corrected. But clearly, it is way too elevated, way more than what it should be. And it is of great concern, continues to be of great concern, that so much violence perpetuates in the society, and that people so choose to deal with their issues and problems by resorting to that sort of violence. Now, of course, we are exposed quite often, thanks to social media these days, thanks to the power of the smartphone, the now ubiquitous smartphone, which is in the hands of nearly every citizen, and everybody has become an eye reporter. And so it means that we are now being exposed to quite a lot of what is happening in society in almost real time. We've seen situations of, what has been accused of bullying on school buses. We've seen situations of parents and family fighting with individuals in restaurants in downtown, in the center of Castries. And quite recently, we've been exposed to another somewhat of a conflict between somebody using the public transport system as well as one of those public transport providers, a bus driver. And there again, it seems as if there are quite a lot of conflicts that are arising in society. And how do we come to terms with dealing with those conflicts? Quite often we resort to emotion, and we resort to not necessarily using our best emotional intelligence. And we are certainly, as a society, in need of some anger management. We see it on the roads in terms of the road rage. And you heard earlier on from the Minister for Transport, the Honorable Guy Joseph, speaking about road safety, and particularly this week. And I didn't catch the exact figure, but I'm pretty certain he said something in the region of over 1,100 serious injuries over the past 10 years from accidents, from vehicular accidents, and over, I think, 179 fatalities. So very, very high rate indeed, and it has a very big implication in terms of how we move forward. I'm not sure that necessarily those are directly related to instances of road rage, but certainly it does suggest in our society how we deal with ourselves, and having duty of care and respect to others, wherever it may be, whether it's on the roads, whether it's on the buses, whether it's in the restaurants, whether in whatever interaction that we are faced with right now. And certainly the crime situation is not one to be taken lightly, because there are certain and clear consequences to the public health system, but also in terms of the overall society. There's a loss of productivity, there's a loss of families, a destruction of families due to the psychological bombardment that is faced when families have to deal with these situations. So certainly not a very good situation, and we certainly want to lament it and hope that in these instances, persons can in fact find justice. It was certainly very interesting, and from what we were hearing about that last homicide, there were notes that were left back. It would seem to be a very interesting situation for investigation in terms of leads there. But again, the question is, do we have the resources to actually put forward to actually solving some of these crimes? And of course, more importantly, bringing those individuals to justice. So that is the hope. And I think we will have to continue to monitor the situation, because the Christmas decorations have not yet been put up in Castries. But it certainly does seem as if the season has begun in great earnest in terms of people going out and shopping in other people's homes, even though they have not been invited to do just that. And that was our dish of the day.
This has been The Daily Dish.
Plus style.
Come
plus
get your style.
Style.
Plus
style.
We have tests for inside and outside. Bathroom, kitchen with the best price. We range from colors to size. So anytime you want tile, come down and get tile. Everybody welcome to Tiles Plus. Come get your tiles with the low cost. Tiles with the style like a Christmas. All kind of tiles, cause we are the boss. Everybody welcome to Tiles Plus. Come get your tiles with the low cost. Tiles with the style like a crisscross. All kind of tiles, cause we are the boss. We are located Lance Road in Castries, Bosses, Jugros Delay, and Clark Street in VFR. Telephone number 453-7939. That's telephone number 453-7939. Tiles Plus.
And welcome back to the lunchroom. Thank you for sticking with us. Now, of course, what has been touted as a success story in terms of investment, and that one in the north of the island, is a proposed golf resort project, which has come to be known as Cabot St. Lucia. And somewhere back in June of this year, we actually began speaking about Cabot here at the lunchroom. And in fact, at the time, we did point out that there was a sword turning ceremony going on. And at that point, the land still, in fact, was under the ownership of, persons who were charged with the responsibility of the property by the bank. It was under receivership of Scotiabank. That was as a result of a failed attempt dating back to about 2006 into 2008, and that was a Raffles golf resort project on the same property essentially, and that was involving somewhere in the region of 350 or 60 acres of property, of which freehold was in the region of 300 acres, and the balance was in fact Queen's Chain. It's a very lovely property for some of you who are familiar with that part of the island. I know a number of people go up to a viewing point, which has become to be known as the Moon, interestingly enough, where you have a lovely view of the northeast coast of St. Lucia, looking right back down to Casaba and Comrade and the Dauphé Hills. So that property in question, nearly 3.5 kilometers of coastline, was originally planned for development of a golf course. That project came to a crash, so to speak, back in 2007, 2008, as a result of the global financial crisis. The property at the time was to have been developed as a Raffles property, I believe a Greg Norman golf resort. Of course, that did not come to being, and it did, in fact, indicate the general trend worldwide where golf projects were not actually coming to fruition because of the difficulty of realizing these projects. The demand for golf properties had, in fact, declined. Now, remember, in a lot of these projects, there are two components. There is the pure golf course component, which is and that line of revenue, persons who actually go out and pay to play a round of golf. But then the more lucrative side of it, which is where quite often the developer is looking to actually bring in some money, the majority of the money is on the real estate side, and that is persons who would be buying homes next to golf properties. Well, that demand has certainly declined, and suggestions coming out from globally, from the United States, and as well from the United Kingdom, is that a number of golf courses are, in fact, in some instances closing down, and in other instances just simply not doing very well. So that is what the background of that project is. And we also spoke regarding the fact that the owner was coming out of Nova Scotia, same place as where the bank receiver was based, the Bank of Nova Scotia. And they had owned two properties up in a part of Nova Scotia called Cape Breton. And that was in a town called Inverness, very low-key town, so to speak, less than 1,500 people there. And they were certainly looking for investors to come in desperately, so much so that they, in fact, gave nearly 200 acres of land to an investor for just a dollar, even after spending, I think, over $4 million in remediation. So clearly, these investors have essentially gotten a very good hand and a good run for quite some time. And here, right here in St. Lucia, there was a similar situation where it appears that the government suggested to the National Insurance Corporation, or maybe appeared that they suggested to the developers that they should approach the National Insurance Corporation for a very lovely loan in the region of $30 million so that the developers could actually purchase the property. And that, of course, we discussed at length, and we looked at it from many other aspects. Now, moving into the more developmental side of things, it appears that there is a move now to start work on this project. And to discuss that with me is somebody who's been looking very critically at that whole project. And she is no stranger to sustainable development. In fact, is an expert, a professional within the setting of sustainable tourism, mm-hmm. And formerly also working at the Cultural Development Foundation, and a former councillor of the St. Lucia National Trust. She is, and a resident of Kappa State, I should perhaps also add, Miss Finola Jennings Clark. And she is also in studio. We also have a gentleman, again, who has been in the lunchroom before, a very passionate advocate on all things heritage and conservation, and also a member of the St. Lucia National Trust, as well as the St. Lucia Archaeological and Historical Society, Mr. Laurent Japier, better known by many as Jomo. Lady and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me here in the lunchroom to discuss what exactly is going on with Cabot, the Cabot Links or Cabot St. Lucia project. Finola, maybe we could start with you as a resident. Have you been engaged maybe through the Residents Association? Can you maybe give us an idea as to how that has moved forward in terms of the relationship between the developer and the community?
I can to an extent. So I am a CAP resident. I mean, I've lived there since 1974. Obviously, I was a little younger when I moved there. I first reached out to Cabot on my own account, and I advised, we have, like many places, a WhatsApp community. So I let the WhatsApp community know that I had reached out. And I requested, as did quite a few other residents, that we engage Cabot to find out what's really going on and discuss the implications for Kappa State in particular. That's kind of where my involvement from Kappa State side really, I wouldn't say ended, but, you know, sort of petered out, and I handed it over to the Residents Committee executive, and they've been following up. The president met with the Cabot Links developers and presented the issues, and as far as I know, that's pretty much as far as it's gone. I've since moved on. Actually, Jomo kind of instigated it by asking us to come and walk the site with him. And out of that came a group of just concerned citizens that wanted to push for what we would consider more fully respecting the sustainable development goals and concepts by, in particular, looking at local rights and local engagement in any development, but obviously immediately dealing with Cabot, St. Lucia. So that kind of summarizes the basics.
I mean, Kappa State, 1,500-acre estate, which most of which has thus far been developed from the 1960s and 70s, already an existing 18-hole golf course, which was, in fact, originally a 9-hole. It was extended a couple of decades ago. Now a second golf course being proposed in that area on the eastern side of Kappa State. Is that, you think, a reasonable, given that it seems to lend itself gently rolling hills, you think that's a reasonable potential development for that area?
I don't think that it's necessarily the best. There are certain specific issues, one of which is that Kappa State has been chronically water short all these years. So, for instance, we don't get water in our pipes at all during the week where I live. We never have. And so it's required that all houses that are built in CAP have a minimum 5,000-gallon tank. And, you know, the majority of CAP residents are fine with that, and they have swimming pools as well. So, you know, it's not like they're being super cautious about water in that extent. But also, you know, I've walked in that area for all these years, even, you know, from when I was a young teenager. And after the initial Raffles clearance, which was a pretty comprehensive clearance and cleared out a lot of what was there, including some cacti that have since become rare partially because of that clearance. And in walking it now, it's just healed itself. And it's a very biodiverse area. And by biodiverse, we're talking about lots of different plant species, birds and small animals and insects. And of course, it's quite pristine. There's nothing else there that's leaking off into the coastal waters, aside from the hotel at Kazamba. That's pretty much it. So you're talking about taking an area that is pristine, biodiverse, and changing it entirely into a golf course. So yes, I can see the appeal for the development, and I can see the appeal insofar as jobs. We understand, you know, we're chronically short of jobs at all levels in St. Lucia. That's completely understood. And in that sense, you know, those are the potential positives. And of course, for CAP Estate landowners, potentially land values will go up, which is good for the people who own in CAP Estate. But in that process, you have what you call gentrification starts to happen. And only the people who have land that they can sell or properties that they can sell will benefit immediately in terms of income, or people who are renting properties. And it has a knock-on effect that it raises rental prices around the community, and then that goes further out into the island. St. Lucia is just a big community, really, you know. And then land taxes go up and cost of living goes up. And what happens is you have locals, your average local, no longer able to afford to buy or rent or live in the area. And even if they are able to do that, you have this sense of alienation that builds, because your prime properties are being occupied by people who are not St. Lucians, who are not from the area and are bringing different values, etc. Obviously, I don't know if it's obvious, but I wasn't born in St. Lucia, so I am an import myself. But I've seen St. Lucia through independence and taken citizenship early on, and always worked very much within the community in St. Lucia. So it's not like we don't want foreign investment or foreign people to come and take out citizenship, fall in love as they do all the time with St. Lucia, and come and live here. And share, but there has to be a limit, and there has to be a balance.
Right, and one should even question about the whole concept of that foreign investment if we are giving loans for it in any case.
Yes.
But Jomo, maybe you could jump in here, because Finola was speaking, of course, about the whole issue of the biodiversity, it just being able to heal. Now, I mean, you, Jomo, I mean, a trained botanist, this is your field, really. You've lived in the rainforest, I could say, and you've probably been walking through that area of CAP Estate probably for decades now. You probably know it very, very well. Even before it went through that whole experience of Raffles. Tell us about what exactly is there that is so unique and special from a botanical, a flora and fauna perspective.
Okay, I want to bring greetings from MAC and Museums
Association of the Caribbean. Okay.
Just coming from that meeting in Martinique, meeting of the minds and discussing. Even museums are evolving and beginning to look at a new ethos, a new way of developing museums, not from the point of view of what I call the mausoleums or the dead museums or passive museums, but a more active museum. So we'd have two models of the old type of museum, vis-a-vis like a bird with two wings, with a living museum where you see children making baskets, the cultural intellectuals teaching how to make pottery and in the right setting, so that children and the future could, They wouldn't go up and mash up a petroglyph in Dauphin. They would understand the value. But so much for that.
Yeah, and we are going to speak about the archaeological aspects of that area as well, because that, of course...
We're talking thing. But so I've been walking that area for decades, as you've rightly said, more than 40 years. I'm a protege of people like Robert DeVoe, the late Robert DeVoe, the late Gabriel Coco Charles. These are my mentors. These are the people who groomed me, and I have become what I have become and becoming as a result of these guys who love St. Lucia. And they want their children to enjoy St. Lucia like they did, and to keep it in as good a condition as they inherited it for their children. It's not just Robert, and you have Gregor Williams, and all of these guys impact my life on a very deep level. And what I have become is because of these pioneers, Mr. King, Wilville King, and Paba, and all of these champions, St. Lucia, some of the women, Miss Laurent, and all of these people. So these people had a profound impact on my being. And I've been walking that area, if all its pipe cactus, standing in guard, as some of them with spines, some of them without, but like this, they like the guard in the valley, you know, with all their spines and arms, you know, and so forth. It's a
very dry, semi-arid area.
It's a dry scrub kind of for vegetation. Mm-hmm. So the species, they are very important species, especially on the coastline. They attract birds and butterflies and insects that inhabit that special vegetation or that special habitat. And it's an endangered kind of habitat. We are losing most of these habitats in St. Lucia right now. They're becoming fewer and fewer. And it was the last place in the northeastern corridor of the island where you have such an expanse of green and cacti in all its glory, in all its beauty, in all its elegance.
So much so that it was dubbed Cactus Valley.
It was dubbed Cactus Valley. When you stand at Hardy's Point and you look down at this that valley, you say, oh, I'm glad to be a St. Lucian. I'm proud to be a St. Lucian. I want it to remain like that, not just for people like me to see, because I'm on my way out, but for the next generation to be able to enjoy it. And it was a living museum. It was a living study area. We brought students there to teach them about dry scrub forest, to teach them about botany, to teach them. So education is value, not just golf course. When you bring your children, the leaders of tomorrow, in that space, and they can take a deep breath, wonderment, that has value, you know. Not all that counts can be counted, and not all that can be counted counts. And you have unique species there of cacti. It's one of the last species where you have at least 5 species of cacti, including the Pope's Head, which is a rare and endangered species of cacti right now as we speak, because it was over-harvested and it's very difficult to grow in this area. And I mean, it's almost immaculate when you look at this area, though it was sort of ruffled, so to speak, from ruffles a few years ago. But it has recovered in a marvelous way. Nature has healed itself, and when it is beginning to take off, we're hearing about another golf course in such close proximity to another golf course that's really already existing, that has already been expanded and extended. And we're wondering what kind of development is that? What kind of crackpot development? What kind of an Osimo development? Where you have, without consultation, that is what hurts. I mean, the state sends us to school. We are sons and daughters of this country. We have gone out and have more degrees than thermometers now. We come back to make a contribution to our country. And our leaders are not consulting us. And these are what I call community assets. That's an asset that we have as a community. People bathe on the beach. It's one of the most people-friendly beaches we have on the island. Your children could go way out, and they know the kind of waves that...
You're speaking about Casaba, certainly not Donkey Beach.
Yeah, Casaba. Okay. Yes. You know, so, I mean, I'm looking at the area in total.
Yes.
Because it's an ecosystem, and one will feed off the edge and impact each other. So if you mess up on top, what do you expect in Casaba? So it's a whole, we have to look at things as a whole, in total. Not everything that is amazing, every spot that is amazing and beautiful, we must just sell out.
We must leave some for us to behold. There's something called wonderment. So that our imagination could flourish and fertile ground for our imagination to take off. And that's what you want in a society, where you have dialogue, where you have discourse, where we say, which is the best way to go? And Cactus Valley is one of these places that should not be developed without intense dialogue and discussion and bringing all the minds together so that we could have what I call a reflective equilibrium.
Now, I definitely want to go into this, get a sense as to where we are at in the process. Mm-hmm. But we do that after the weather news, which we'll take a break for in a bit. But certainly that whole conversation as to exactly where we were at. We were hearing about EIAs from 2006 being wanted to be applied in 2019. So you'll give us a sense of that when we come back after we listen to that clip in as well.
Christmas.
Yes, it's that time again. Navita Designs, now housed at Rayner Construction and Industrial Products Limited, Vite Boutte, is all stocked and ready to offer you the most unique and elegant Christmas decor for any space. Whether it's white Christmas, red and white peppermint, multicolored candy, or the more contemporary, elegant combinations, we've got it. Don't forget that small accent pieces goes a long way to give that wow effect. And what says Christmas more than the act of giving? So remember to pick up all your gift wrapping essentials and Christmas stockings to bring good cheer. At Navita Designs, we do the creative thinking for you. Visit us at our new showroom in Vite Boutte on the John Compton Highway or call us at 450-7246. Navita Designs Christmas Collection, sponsored by Rayner Construction and Industrial Products Limited. Let the magic begin.
Fritas, Fritas, come and get your Fritas here. Give them away at Island Style. Tell them that.
All your madam. What do you mean Fritas?
Well, madam, for every 100 tires you buy at our regular price at Island Style, we'll give you up to an amazing 25 tires free.
Really?
And to be honest, yeah, we've probably gone a little mad.
Wow, that's a deal. And good timing too. So I can pretty up my house in time for Christmas. And look how nice those tires are.
Free tires, ceramic tires, porcelain tires, all tires, no exception. Visit us at Bella Rosa, Rodney Bay, John Crompton Highway, Castries, and Latoni, View 4. Or call 452-450 or 453. Tire.
Attention, attention, attention. Introducing Palmer Automotive Batteries, a leading brand in Asia, now in St. Lucia. Palmer Automotive Batteries are now available at Battery World Plus, Rodney Bay and Massad, Shimari's Garage, Blair's Auto and other leading store outlets. Palmer batteries are of the highest quality and standard with full warranty. Palmer is powered by cutting-edge technology and the leader of the new era. Palmer brand, the best price batteries on the market. Call us today, 453-7037, 451-2264. 4450-0390.
Caribbean Metals Limited presents Spin to Win promotion. Spend $500 or more and get a chance to spin to win instant prizes. Spend $2,500 or more and get a chance to spin and enter into the grand prize draw. We have not forgotten our account holders. Pay on your account and get the same chance to win. Promotion runs the first week every month until December. The grand prize, $5,000 cash on December 6, 2019. Like, share, and subscribe to our pages on the various social platforms for more details. Terms and conditions apply. This promotion is approved by the National Lotteries Authority. Caribbean Metals, we've got you covered. Guaranteed.
Get 5 weeks free when you buy home or contents insurance from Beacon. Our insurance is very affordable, and we've got online and mobile services for your convenience. Call us at 458-5860 or log on to beacon.co.tt for a quote today.
This is Radio Caribbean International. It's now time for the weather news.
And now a look at the latest weather report as of 12 noon. Today is the 18th of November, 2019. Our forecast is Vigil Saltibus. The present weather at Huronera Fair and at George Charles, it's partly cloudy. The present temperature at Huronera, 31 degrees Celsius or 88 degrees Fahrenheit. And last night's minimum temperature at Huronera was 23 degrees Celsius or 73 degrees Fahrenheit. Wind at Huronera is blowing from the south at 9 miles per hour or 15 kilometers. And after a 24-hour period ended at 8 a.m., 1.4 millimeters of rainfall was recorded at Huronera and only 0.6 millimeter for rainfall was recorded at George Charles. The total rainfall for the month of November thus far, 93.8 millimeters at Huronera, at George Charles, 59.3 millimeters. Sunset today, 28 minutes before 6. Sunrise in the morning, 5 minutes after 6. Now for the forecast for St. Lucia, valid for the next 24 hours. The winds will be light and variable, becoming calm at times, and the weather, fair skies, occasionally becoming cloudy with some scattered showers, which may be heavy in some locations. A recap of the forecast for St. Lucia, valid for the next 24 hours. The winds will be light and variable, becoming calm at times, and the weather, fair skies, occasionally becoming cloudy with some scattered showers, which may be heavy in some locations. The marine forecast for seas in a 25-mile or 40-kilometer radius from St. Lucia. Presently, we are experiencing low tide at the Castries Harbour. High tide will be at 25 before 8 tonight. And for the Vierfort Bay, the low tide at 26 after 2 this afternoon, and the high tide will be at 18 minutes before 9 tonight. The seas are slight to moderate. The waves and swells 3 to 5 feet, the same as 0.9 to 1.5 meters in open waters. For the Lesser Antilles, fair skies, occasionally becoming cloudy with widely scattered showers and a slight chance of isolated thunderstorms. That is the forecast for the Lesser Antilles. Again, fair skies, occasionally becoming cloudy with widely scattered showers and a slight chance of isolated thunderstorms. The tropical weather outlook indicates moisture and instability in the lower atmosphere around the eastern Caribbean region will cause some showery periods over the islands during the next 24 hours. And a broad area of low pressure located 450 miles or 724 kilometers to the east-northeast of the northern Windward Islands is drifting northwestward to northward over the open Atlantic. Some gradual development of this system is expected during the next few days, and it may become a tropical or subtropical depression. Conditions are expected to be less conducive for its development by midweek, and this system is not expected to pose a direct threat to our region. And a tropical wave over the eastern tropical Atlantic is moving westward near 8 miles per hour or 13 kilometers. So a recap again of the tropical weather outlook. Moisture and instability in the lower atmosphere around the eastern Caribbean region will cause some showery periods over the islands during the next 24 hours. And a broad area of low pressure located 450 miles or 724 kilometers east-northeast of the northern Windward Islands is drifting northwestward to northward over the open Atlantic. Some gradual development of this system is expected during the next few days, and it may become a tropical or subtropical depression. Conditions are expected to be less conducive for its development by midweek, and this system is not expected to pose a direct threat to our region. And that's welcoming news. That is the official weather report at this time. Thank you, Vigil, for the update. The next official report from the Met Service is due at 6:30 in the morning. Hope you'll join us then. The weather was made possible by Island Style Thailand Bath, Battery World Plus, Caribbean Metals, and Beacon Insurance.
This has been RCI's weather news. For more information, call the weather hotline at 454-3452. RCI 101 number 1.
Free tires, free tires. Come and get your free tires here. We're giving them away at Island Style Thailand Bath.
So are you mad? What do you mean free tires?
Well, madam, for every 100 tires you buy at our regular price at Island Style, we'll give you up to an amazing 25 tires free.
Really?
And to be honest, yeah, we've probably gone a little mad.
Wow, that's a deal. And good timing too. So I can pretty up my house in time for Christmas. And look how nice those tires are.
Free tires, free tires. Ceramic tires, porcelain tires, all tires, no exception. Visit us at Bella Rosa, Rodney Bay, John Crompton Highway, Castries, and Lutony, View 4. Or call 452-450 or 453. Tile.
Attention, attention, attention. Introducing Palmer Automotive Batteries, a leading brand in Asia, now in St. Lucia. Palmer Automotive Batteries are now available at Battery World Plus, Rodney Bay and Massad, Shimari's Garage, Blair's Auto, and other leading store outlets. Palmer batteries are of the highest quality and standard with full warranty. Palmer is powered by cutting-edge technology and the leader of the new era. Palmer brand, the best price batteries on the market. Call us today, 453-7037, 451-226. 64-450-0390.
Caribbean Metals Limited presents Spin to Win Promotion. Spend $500 or more and get a chance to spin to win instant prizes.
prizes. Spend $2,500 or more and get a chance to spin and enter into the grand prize draw. We have not forgotten our account holders. Pay on your account and get the same chance to win. Promotion runs the first week every month until December. The grand prize, $5,000 cash on December 6, 2019. Like, share, and subscribe to our pages on the various social platforms for more details. Terms and conditions apply. This promotion is approved by the National Lotteries Authority. Caribbean Metals, we've got you covered. Guaranteed.
Get 5 weeks free when you buy home or contents insurance from Beacon. Our insurance is very affordable, and we've got online and mobile services for your convenience. Call us at 458-5860 or log on to beacon.co.tt for a quote today.
And welcome back to the Lunchroom. Thanks for sticking with us here at the Lunchroom, powered by Navita Designs. Now, of course, we've been speaking with Mr. Jomo Laura-Jean-Pierre and Ms. Finola Jennings-Clark regarding the Cabot development, Cabot St. Lucia, in the Kappa State area, and of course talking very passionately about the value, the nature conservation value of that area. But it seems as if work has begun to some extent on the site, although we're not too sure exactly to what extent and whether approvals have in fact been given. But I think there's a very interesting clip from Janika Simon from Choice News doing a bit of investigative reporting, which I think we'll try to play at this time, and then we can come back to discuss that.
When I last reported on ongoing developments at the Kappa State site of the future Cabot Golf Project, I indicated that I was seeking information about the status of the DCA application that all development projects must file in order to begin work. Well, since then, sources inside the Development Control Authority have confirmed that exactly 2 weeks ago, on the 30th of October, the authority granted permission to the developers for what is referred to as, quote, land movement and golf course operations. According to the sources, there were several conditions attached to the approval, all of which need to have been fulfilled prior to the commencement of any work on the property. Some of these were administrative in nature, such as submitting the names of key site and technical personnel. Other conditions require more effort. For example, plans need to be submitted reflecting only the golf course components. That means no proposed buildings and no future development work. Consent needed to be received from the Crown Lands Office for use of the Queen's Chain. As you can see from this master plan image taken from the Cabot St. Lucia website, a beach restaurant is proposed to be built atop the rocky pools in the promontory on Casaba Beach, where many St. Lucian toddlers get their first experience with the salt of the ocean. Permission for this use of public lands must be granted. So, could all of this work have been done within the two-week time period since approval was granted? A reliable source at the Crown Lands Department says that an application by the Cabot Group has been before the agency for over a month, but says that no decision has as yet been taken. So the question is, how can this site clearance have occurred if the developers have not met at least one of the conditions stipulated by the DCA? Well, DCA approval was also given for debushing of the area and for establishing lines of sight, apparently for surveying purposes. So could this be the aegis under which the bulldozer was working last week? My sources in the construction field disagree with each other on the exact definition of debushing. One engineer contends that there is absolutely no need to scrape the soil bare, especially in such an ecologically sensitive area such as Point Hardy, but an architect argues that if debushing is done with heavy earth-moving equipment, well, this would be the expected result. So let's say that the Cabot Point developers are using the debushing rationale for the clearance of this substantial piece of the property and are doing this work having been granted the requisite permission by the DCA. This raises a number of new questions. Why would the DCA grant approval for major site clearance and land movement work without asking developers to perform an environmental impact assessment? Why is it acceptable to reuse a more than decade-old EIA, which was prepared for a completely different project, given that understanding of sustainable development practices have advanced significantly since then? Reliable sources indicate to me that the St. Lucia National Trust, a referral agency of the DCA, did communicate significant concerns about the lack of timely and relevant information surrounding the project, and specifically requested that a new EIA and ESIA, Environmental and Social Impact Assessment, be done. The DCA has since asked the National Trust for clarifications on several of these concerns, but in the meantime, it is the EIA from the Raffles Project, completed in 2006 with an addendum filed in 2007, which the DCA used to make determinations about approvals for the Cabot Point project. The community of Kappa State residents appears divided over the issue. Some, anticipating an increase in their property values, are in favor of the development. Others have said that this vast construction project, which sprawls over five beaches, will restrict public access to the last remaining open beachfronts, which are regularly used by St. Lucians island-wide.
Right, and that was an abridged piece from Janika Simons reporting on the whole Cabot development. Of course, very interesting issues being brought to the fore. Number one, the whole issue of the environmental impact assessment, which is a requirement for a development like a golf course project or a touristic project, as is this one as well. But the indication is that not as yet no environmental impact assessment has been done. And that there's an attempt, I believe, to use an old EIA dated from nearly 13 years ago.
Yes. So,
your thoughts on that?
Yes, that's how I understand it. So I was part of a team with the National Trust that reviewed the old EIA that was being put forward for this project. And there was a list of strong recommendations to fill in the gaps, the many gaps that existed in that. In that period, if you just even think that we had Hurricane Tomas in that time, but 10 to 12 years is far too long of a period to just reuse an old study. And as we had said before, the whole nature of the environment has regrown itself, and it is different to how it was before. So there are many issues with that. And also, I don't think there was sufficient, information in the EIA on the specifics.
Well, since then, in fact, in particular, in Jomo, I believe there was, in fact, an archaeological study that was done since that EIA was done back in 2006 by University of Leiden. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Perhaps? Yeah, Leiden, it was more or less of a rescue project. Bones were
Exposed,
found
in the Casaba
beach and in the water. And so Leiden, who has a reputation in the Caribbean, the ANH contacted Leiden and invited them to come and do a rescue project. So that was not even an in-depth AIA, archaeological impact assessment. It was, as I would repeat, a rescue project. So the entire area has not been studied. It is a very understudied area in terms of its archaeology.
Tell us a little bit, because we've seen clearance that is going on already, and I know some calls are coming in before we can take some of these calls. Tell us, 300 acres of land, or if you include the Queen's Chain, 360 acres of land we're speaking about, and we're seeing just clearance, no attempt to keep any larger trees. It's just sending in a machine and completely clearing the site. How risky is that? What's the impact of that?
The problem with that is done without consultation. The people who are clearing are not botanists. They know nothing about archaeology. They are just clearers. And in the 21st century, we cannot have that kind of ad hoc development.
Let's try to take a call very quickly. Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate today?
Yes, good afternoon, Karik. Good afternoon to your guest. Jomo, my brother. Don't you think it's time that we take some action? I know there's been a lot of talk. I know the trust, I think you're a member of the trust as well. Can the trust now put an injunction against that project? Because the same way they did for the prison, I don't know, maybe it's a public matter. I don't know if the trust has any jurisdiction or local standard. But, I think the only way you can do anything, especially with this government, is action and the courts. Is the only way you need to go, unfortunately. So can there be some action in terms of putting a stop and let this whole thing be revisited?
Well, I speak here as a, I will put off my trust cap and my ANH cap, and I speak here as a citizen. Every citizen have locus standi. And if a group of citizens like the Kapa State citizens and other concerned citizens who utilize the area for diverse activities and even just for wonderment, you go for your walks in the morning and you just want to enjoy the ambiance of the beautiful, one of the last beautiful corridors in the in our island, the citizens can take the government to court, because the government has to realize democracy does not start at the ballot box or finish at the ballot box. It's a continual conversation with your citizenry. And that's the problem with this administration, I dare say. It's like, I mean, this is like a despot, a bully. And I'm saying it frankly, that people have been bullied into a wise leader guides without control. And when the people do it, they say, we've done it. That's what a wise leader does. But we, leaders that are not wise, they use might and bullying. And we've seen lots of them in the past decades. And they all, most of them end to you know the end. We did not deliberate on the end. We know it.
But Carla, there is a possibility of using what is known as a judicial review. Because there are laws, there's a planning act, and there is, in fact, an opportunity to question or to ask the court to review whether the proper procedures were followed with respect to the application, if there is an application, of course, there must have been an application from what we're being told, and whether, in fact, due consideration was done, whether everything was above board.
So my friend, use your local... use your local social capital.
Yes, I'm Jomo, but the point I'm making to you is that at the end of the day... you know, everything is going to cost money. I mean, and you don't have any group of lawyers or some kind of
pro bono lawyers,
association of lawyers who are going to fight this thing.
Well, don't say that. You know, don't say that. Nothing beats a trial. Use your social capital. Listen to me now, Aziz. Hold on. Use your social capital with your other friends, our friends, and let's bring some lawyers on board and St. Lucians who are concerned. Let's do it.
No, I'm not saying let's do it, you know. All I'm saying is that by now, I think...
Stop depending on the trust alone. The citizenry must stand up.
I'm making a suggestion, Jomo. And the point I'm making in all of this is that sometimes, you know, we need to use what is available to us. Right now, if people are not aware of what's available, first of all, is available to them, then they all sit down with a backhanded attitude and nothing can be done and the government can do it and get away with it. And normally, when you go and fight these cases, right, I mean, the legal fees... And no money high. And
yeah, we spin it up in my head.
I think we're on the same page.
Caller. We need to get some kind of, I don't know, I mean, Aziz,
we need to stop passing the buck. Frankly, I'm talking frank now. Let us get together with like minds and make it happen. That idea of just depending on the trust or the ANH, we are the professionals. We give the public the information. It's time for the public to act. That's my philosophy right now.
All right, Joe. I want to keep some other people's time, but
okay.
We'll talk.
Thanks very much, caller, for that contribution. But, of course, there's a very good example in the United Kingdom where a lady challenged the whole prorogation matter. And in fact, she was very successful right up to the UK Supreme Court. But just a very quick question about do people really appreciate the economic value of these spaces? Is there an economic value to this wilderness, to nature at all? What are your thoughts?
Yes, there is. And no, I don't think people do, because we tend to have this conversation that, oh, y'all just want to keep the places natural and you don't want development and that. And that's not the case. It's very well proven throughout the world that natural spaces have direct economic value. So if you think about it, recreation and improved health, improved peace of mind, lowered crime rates, increased family quality of family life. These are all things that directly redound to economic benefits, increased productivity at work because you're healthy, you're in a good frame of mind, you feel comfortable in the country where you live, and you're not relying on the country's healthcare system. There I go there at this point in time, but you know, you have very direct economic benefits. They're not like ticket sales.
No,
they are genuine economic benefits.
But these are the intangibles. But there's tangible monies that could be made from these sites. We could develop it into parks. Yeah. The world is moving in a different direction. The old models of the so-called development, which is now being termed envelopment and not development, because development is supposed to enhance and not envelop and destroy. And that is the old model that we have seen for over 500 years that reaches its zenith and it collapses. And that is where our civilization is going. It's an existential threat. So we are fixing the furniture on the deck while the ship is sinking. We can make money with a new model of development.
Indeed.
Parks
we have another
and
call.
Protected areas.
I believe we have another call coming in on our WhatsApp platform. So let's try to take this call in. Good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchroom. Good afternoon. It looks like we've lost that caller. It would have been rather interesting, an architect gentleman.
Okay.
But certainly very interesting points. But you are, in fact, doing some advocacy work right now. There's a petition out there, Finola.
There is, and I'll just continue a moment on Jomo's thoughts. Of course, we're talking about eco-resorts also as well, and not just an empty park, but there's a lot that you can do within that. So, to our advocacy. So after we walked with Jomo the first time, the group decided that they wanted to take action. And we started out as a small group, and we started to write a petition. And we have a petition on change.org. And if I can just bring it up, it says, maintain local rights and promote sustainable development is the Save Our Coast. There are 1,875 signatories. It's been up a couple of weeks now. But basically, it talks about Cabot, but it's aimed at changing that whole development concept and conversation.
And particularly this issue of the Queen's Chain.
Particularly
coastal
the Queen's
property
Chain.
Owned by the state.
It can be, even the question of whether it can be legally leased, especially on emphytutic leases, which confer a level of ownership.
Okay, I think we have that call coming in, so let's take it very quickly. Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate today?
Good afternoon to all. The last time I went to a National Trust meeting, and I didn't go to any more. The last time, my mission for pushing for an island-wide national development plan, and three people stood up to support me. Pat Charles, Rebecca Williams' wife, and another lady, maybe she's the one, I don't know, because at the NIC building. And Pat said, this is what we need.
Yep.
You see, as long as you don't have that, you're going to be in this run around, running after every little thing, like in some guerrilla warfare type of thing. We must have a base to talk from. We don't know what next is going to happen, where next is anything going to happen. In fact, at that time, after that, National Trust opted instead to go for conservation areas. But the thing about having a conservation area, you can very well have development around it that can impact it so badly that could just render it useless. And this is what I'm talking about. And I've been talking about for years. But you see, there's an attitude here. Who the hell is he saying what he says? We're not going to give him valet. He'll steal our shine. A lot of nonsense. That's why we're in this mess. Because there's certain people don't want to listen to. And all I'm saying, I want to live in a very happy place. So making my contribution in what I can do. And if we don't have that physical plan for development, whether it is the Pitores, whether it is Cap Estate, we don't know whether we should continue building laterally or go vertically. We don't know how much land we have left for whatever. We don't know what we have. So it's a helter-skelter, putting things all, we have to stop that.
So, caller, here's an open invitation to you to discuss that, because I personally agree with you 1,000%. So certainly we will definitely have to speak, and maybe you can come in and elaborate on that, because I think that's a very critical point indeed. Thank you.
As a matter of fact, I'll say this last thing. Hello?
Go ahead.
Quickly.
I'll say this last thing. At the last general meeting that I went to in annual general meeting, I went to Viewfort. A gentleman from England, a St. Lucian born, but an elderly gentleman, came down here. I have in my possession a pair of binoculars with National Trust emblem on it. He said he came to give it to the National Trust. But please, he thinks that I should take it because I made that same kind of delivery there too when I was out. It's ridiculous.
Thank you very much, caller.
Yeah, but I want to respond.
Thank you very much. Very quickly. Yes, go ahead.
The Trust has attempted from the 80s to put together a parks and protected areas. Mm-hmm. And I hear you, but in the parks and protected areas, there would be limits within which you can build. So that was a plan that was rejected, by the way, by both governments.
So buffer zones.
Buffer zones, etc. Yeah. So it has not been taken seriously. But that started from the 80s. We labored for day and night, going with consultation, with people on the ground. It was done with dialogue and consultation and going to the villages and asking questions, asking the people what they would like to save in their own environment and making recommendations. So we've been doing that work. They have not been taking the trust seriously.
Let's try to take one last call very quickly. Good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate today?
You know, I listened to Jomo and the other lady there. Good afternoon to you all.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And I saw a little bit of the trust meeting. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you something. We all know in St. Lucia, anything can stop with the policymakers. And the Cabot links, the Cabot, and the other projects that are detrimental to St. Lucia environment and to the people in no consultation, is bottom line. The Prime Minister, his cabinet, the policymakers, they are the ones that putting us in that mess. Bottom line. I don't see the trust. I don't see other. We could fight. It's good to fight. But it's whether or not that the policymakers are going to listen to us.
Well, caller, the problem is... The problem is once people become leaders in this part of our world, they become polymaths. They are engineers. A bus driver becomes an engineer. A guy who did management in whatever becomes, he knows everything about conservation. No more consultation. That is our problem. We're not talking to each other. There's no dialogue. And I'm crying out for dialogue so that we could take this country in a new direction. It must stop that bullying kind of governance. It has to be done with the citizenry, with dialogue. That's why we went to school. That's why we were educated, to bring our best back to our country. And we want to be heard.
Well, I think you certainly were heard today, Jomo. Very, very passionate indeed. And Finola, any positive issue? And I hope that, in fact, you keep it live so that persons do know the need for that dialogue and that consultation, which is, in fact, mandated within the law as a requirement.
Absolutely.
Yep, so I think we're pretty much going to have to end it here, unfortunately. But I do hope that you won't be strangers to the cause, and you can come back at some point to give us an update as to how things are following up in terms of the petition, in terms of whether you're looking at judicial reviews, whatever the case may be regarding the matter of Cabot and ensuring that there is some balanced, sustainable development in whatever happens there. And, of course, that's all the time we have today. Tomorrow, we'll be shifting gears. We'll be trying to speak about St. Jude Hospital for the next 2 days. Tomorrow, my guest, we'll be speaking about the costs of hospitals, and that is Senator Joachim Henry. The following day, I'll be speaking with Mr. Mark Hennicott, and we'll be speaking about the new development of the new wing and architectural implications there, spatial planning implications there. On Thursday, we'll be speaking about fraud. I believe it's International Fraud Week or something of that nature, and I'll be speaking with Ms. Emma Hippolyte, former accountant, as well as on Friday we'll be speaking about education with some good people from the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States, OECS. So that's all the time we have. Thank you very much for calling in and for listening, and of course great thanks to Jomo and Finola for joining me here to speak about the issue of the Cabot Golf Course. And I'm your host, Alex George Jr., saying goodbye.